What's going on? You're listening to the Long Island Sound Podcast, your source for everything Isles and the only Islanders podcast to win one playoff round in a 12-year tenure. But more on that later, Garth. I'm one of your hosts, Damon Vetteri, and I'm joined, as always, by Ben Cohen.
Hey, what's up?
And Kenny Iavero.
What's going on, guys? How's everyone doing?
We're going to find out, because today we are going to get into the fun topic of looking back on Garth Snow.
Yeah.
Why are we doing this? Well, we thought, you know, we've got the momentum of a pretty popular, controversial fish sticks episode. And we thought, why not just add more gasoline onto the raging fire that is Isles Twitter? And we said, well, how can we do that? What's controversial? What's maybe divisive? Probably not, but maybe. And we said, you know, it's Garth. Garth Snow. I think that was a solid choice by us. And I think as we get into it, you'll be surprised that, yes, there's a lot of bad, but there is a lot of good too. But we'll touch on that. We'll touch on that in a minute. We got to get into the games of the week, and it's been a little bit of a roller coaster. We're hot off the heels of the Isles getting murdered in cold blood last night on Coliseum ice by the Predators. But I want to start with the Isles Panthers game. I was there. I was in attendance. Isles win 3-1. Really, to me, a phenomenal road game. They played well. I don't know how it looked on TV, but at the game, it looked like the Isles really just, you know, bottled up the Panthers. They didn't have much sustained pressure or chances.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think that it's not to like oversimplify the Islanders game, even though what I'm about to say I feel like is contradicted 100% by the game at the Coliseum last night. But I feel like when the Islanders have their legs, they either win or lose unluckily. And that's like, and they win like 80% of the time. And to me, and obviously, you know, they'll lay an egg or get unlucky or not play well or kind of somewhere in between. Like, we'll get to Nashville. But I feel like that's like 70-80% of their games. And the only time most of their off nights just come when they're, like Barry Trotz said in a couple games after the point streak, like they were full. And you're never going to be full in the playoffs. I feel like this is a recipe for success in the playoffs because, you know, you're always hungry. You're always, there's that ultimate goal that's just a couple games away.
Yeah. And they're insulated by the system too. That's part of it. You know, like, so if they have their legs and that system, they're going to dominate teams. And if they don't have their legs, they're giving themselves like a 50-50 shot to win. At least I think. Right. And yeah, that makes sense, Kenny, right?
Like, yeah. I mean, with the balanced scoring, it's like, we're not relying on McDavid or a guy, like, you know, like someone just like carry us. It's like, if Barzal's not going, then Nelson's not going. No biggie. We got Lee, Bailey, Beauvillier, Brassard. We got other guys that can step up and score, not to mention our defense has been doing pretty good offensively as well. So
yeah,
we have the right players for the system that we have, I feel.
For sure. And I want to just, you know, staying on that game, couple of things that I just love to see. Anders Lee with the Gordie Howe hat trick, you know, jumped after Boyle after kind of a questionable, wasn't a dirty hit, but it's kind of a late hit on Pelech.
Didn't his stick Lee hit him just in his own face, though?
Yeah. I think so. I don't know. I mean, it was just whatever it was. Like, I didn't think it was anything crazy. I mean, that's Boyle's game. And it was, you know, it was kind of on the blue line, if I'm remembering correctly. Again, I was there, so I didn't have the benefit of, like, replay or anything. But just seeing Lee jump in there and then get rewarded at the end with the goal. And I think he's the first Islanders captain with a Gordie Howe hat trick since Potvin in, like, 86. Because,
wow,
you know, JT wasn't doing that. And, you know, Waite and Guerin, those guys maybe sometimes. But, like, those teams weren't good enough for there to be any emotion. So it was nice nice to see that. Really, really well-represented crowd, as usual, in Sunrise. But I want to call out something. The Panthers organization did something really great for Islander fans. And I know there was a big meetup down there. And they let Islander fans go on the ice after the game to take a group picture. You just have to sign a waiver that basically said if you were wasted and you slip on the ice and crack your skull open, you know, no big deal. So really a classy move by the Panthers. And, you know, the funny thing is, I went to the game and there was a little sticker on my seat that said I won something. So I ended up getting a Panthers hat, which is cool. I gave it to like a little, you know, I gave it to like a Panthers fan and stuff, like a little kid. But, you know, they knew that like they do a good job of you know, kind of giving back to their fans and trying to grow, you know, that team down there. I do want to play.
Oh, benevolent.
I would have shoved the kid.
Good move, Damon. Good move.
What?
Look at you being all benevolent.
Oh, what, with the kid?
Yeah.
You know, well, because look, honestly.
Spill the soda.
Like, hockey's about so much more than just the team you root for. Like, my memories of going to games, like, very, like, I still have trauma that I work through on seeing a Jágr and Lemieux 2-on-0 breakaway when the Penguins were up like 6-2 on a terrible Islanders team in the mid-90s. Like, I still have those memories, but for the most part, my memories are like the people that are there and like, you know, the experiences and stuff. So if you can give that back, like, what am I going to do with a Panthers hat? I can't do anything with that. So, and we won, so I was in a good mood, you know? And it was nice because after that, we serenaded Panthers fans out of their own building, and I just want to share this clip real quick. I was proud of our boys. We were a loud group, and of course now the audio is not going to play. Here we go. This is in the concourse going home. So, you know, you get it. It was nice.
It's louder than Barclays.
It was nice to serenade them out of their own building because they do that to us many, many times. So, overall, like I said, I thought a real good game. The power play was clicking. You know, they got two quick power play goals. You know, just kind of bottled them up. And it was a boring game if you were a fan of the home team, and the fans were booing them on the power play and stuff. So it was a great road game. You love to see that. And then and it was Star Wars night, and it was kind of a weak Star Wars night in Sunrise, not gonna lie. And then the Isles had their own Star Wars day the following Saturday, 1 o'clock game against the Sabres, and that was a little bit more exciting. What did you guys think of that game?
Wait, Dan, before you get to Buffalo, really quickly, just on the Panthers, what happened to Jonathan Huberdeau? I don't think Brendan Burke said his name once on the broadcast.
Can I tell you something? So I was there with my family and Jules, and I turned to Jules like in the – I think it was either right after the game ended or like in the third period, and I was like, that was the worst game I've ever seen Jonathan Huberdeau play. Like, that kid touched the puck like maybe two or three times, or like it was just like, you know, he had the puck on his stick for like half a second. Like, he was non-existent. That whole team just did not show up. Yandel looked iffy. I mean, the only one who really scares me on that team other than Barkov is Hoffman. I mean, his shot. Like, I was close where they had scored when I was down on that end sitting, and the release that he's got. I would love the Isles to snipe him, but they're in the mix, so they're not going to get rid of him. But, man, that kid, he can shoot. But, yeah, Huberdeau, good call, Ben. Terrible game from him. He was just non-existent.
Hoffman's a UFA next year. He's only getting paid 5.1. He's 30 years old. Can play left and right wing, so.
Does his girlfriend come, though? Because I don't know.
Why? Is she a smoke show?
No, she's the one who started all that stuff with Carlson.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wait, that was Hoffman? I thought that was
Hoffman's girlfriend. Hoffman and Carlson's girlfriend when they were both in Ottawa. It was Carlson's wife and Hoffman's girlfriend that, like, I don't even know what went on there, but like they got him out of Ottawa real quick, and then the Sharks just basically used the pick to, you know, used him to leverage some more draft picks out of it, and they traded him right back into the Eastern Conference. So
that's true. That was Hoffman.
Yeah, it was Hoffman. Yeah.
If Brassard's gonna play wing, and a guy like Hoffman, I mean, you bring him in? What do you guys think?
Well, you know, because we're talking about this, of course, because as you know, we didn't start with news. There's some notable news items that we want to cover by the end of the episode. But Taylor Hall,
yeah,
we did not get Taylor Hall, shocker. He goes to Arizona for really what I mean, I don't know the quality of the picks or the prospects that Jersey got back, but I don't think they were like, you know, top blue chip. They were like, you know, decent you know, decent prospects, but nothing crazy. I mean, we could have got him if the Devils wanted to trade him within the division. But
through Twitter, I did not get a sense of what the value of them were. I saw some people saying it would be like trading Wahlstrom and like maybe like Bolduc or like Wild and someone else. Mm-hmm. But also I saw some people saying like that both teams got a better deal or that one team fleeced the other. So I really didn't like get a sense of who got the better deal. And like you said, I have no idea who those prospects are. So
yeah, I can't believe that. Yeah. And you won't know until you see how the Coyotes are with Hall. You won't know until those prospects develop. Will they play? Will they not play? I mean, we'll get, you know, you just never know. I mean, we'll show you a trade that Garth made later on where, like, you know, we traded two high-end Islander prospects that didn't amount to anything, and it ended up looking like a steal for us. So, like, you know, there's just – you never know with that. But let's get through the games here. So Buffalo on the 14th, Isles win 3-2 in overtime. As good as the power play looked in Sunrise, they did not look good back at home. They went 0-for-3 in the second period with one shot. It was anemic. I mean, really, really bad. Dal Cole had a great first period, and then of course he gets hit. Like, it was a collision, really. It wasn't a hit. He leaves the game, but he ended up scoring in the first period. The Brock Nelson, Anthony Beauvillier, and whoever else is on their wing line was incredible that game. This was probably the best game I've ever seen Anthony Beauvillier play. He just took the team on his back. He ended up only with 2 points. He originally had two assists and a goal. They took one of the assists away, but he was great. Another thing, Isles dominated in the faceoff. It was like 70-something%. It was crazy. I think it was a franchise record for faceoff percentage in that game ever. Like not season record, not in the last 10 years. Like, that's the highest they've ever finished for faceoff percentage. So they dominated Buffalo in the faceoff circle.
Was it a franchise record?
Yeah, it was a franchise record. I'm like 99% sure that Eric Hornick tweeted that out. So wow. We can verify it, but that was like, you know, that just unbelievable. They were winning every draw. I thought the first period was real even. I thought the second period was not a great one by the Isles, and I thought that they had a strong third. And, you know, like you guys were saying at the beginning, Ben, you were saying, like, okay, when maybe you don't have the greatest legs in the world with the system the Isles play, you got a 50-50 shot of winning. And that's what happened. You know, Bo made something out of nothing with his speed in overtime, had just a nasty finish on like a pseudo breakaway. It ended up becoming a breakaway, but he was even with the two defenders on Buffalo, and then just, you know, kind of turned on the Jets. Got away from him, finished it. And yeah, the faceoff percentage was 73.3%, and it was a franchise record. And Bo and Nelson were both a +3 that game. So they just, that was their game right there. They dominated that game. So it was nice. Kept the Isles rolling. And then we get to the Predators game.
You're not gonna let us comment.
No, sorry. I was just gonna say, unless you guys have something to say, we'll get to the Predators.
Yeah, there we go. Can
you have? Yeah, I might steal what you're going to say, but the whole situation with Barzal at the end of the game, yeah, we won, but, you know, there's a time and place to be doing that kind of stuff, and Trotz was obviously pretty pissed about it. So maybe it's the best case scenario that happened, learning experience, we still win the game. Let's not see, you know, if it happens again, I might be a little concerned. Like, the last thing I need is, like, Barzal and Trotz to, like, not see eye to eye on things. And.
Yeah. And if you're not, if you didn't see the game, it was Barzal and Dahlin were going at it all game. I mean, it was chippy, the two of them.
Which I love.
And yeah, it was great. But then with the last, you know, in the last, what was it, 2.5, 3 minutes of the game, Barzal comes up high with a hit, like obviously high. You have to call that. And then Buffalo ended up pulling their goalie 6-on-4, and they chip away, and Jack Eichel scores. And, you know, after the game, Trotz said that he thought it was a something personal that he did, not team first. And he said, you know, if it happens again, there'll be, you know, repercussions from that. Which, I, you know, hey, you have to hold your guys accountable no matter who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think as much as obviously terrible Barzal did, like inexcusable, just as Trotz said, like a personal thing, you just can't do that late in the third period. That was like Leo Komarov on steroids. But I think, like Kenny said, we won. And so I think that it's a good learning experience for a guy that, that we sometimes forget is still young. I mean, he's a 30-year player and who is now, you know, he's the first-line center. He's is responsible for being the best player on the team. And to learn these things about his game, because he has an edgy side. And for him to learn these things about what's too far, what's not, what can I do, what can't I do, how do I control my emotions, that kind of thing, is, and still win the game, is ideal.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, with a on a you know, when your team is winning like the Islanders are, you've got that much more rope to, you know, to play with. I mean, not every mistake's not going to lead to the end of the world here. So yeah, it's great. I mean, it's an ideal situation. I'm sure that, you know, Barry's going to say one thing to the media. I'm sure that he's going to say something else. I mean, players love playing for him, so he knows how to get the most out of his players and what's going to be effective and what's not. Barzal cares about winning. That is the thing. So if, you know, that's the one thing that we said from day one with Trotz, is like, he's going to come in and he's going to be a voice that none of these guys have heard before, because he's been there. He just had won the Stanley Cup. So he knows what works and they're going to listen to him. So if he says something to Barzal about, like, don't do it again, I mean, that's stupid, look what you did. But like, Barzal's a smart kid. He obviously knows that. I mean, those guys are out there, you know, fighting for, you know, every battle, and to take a dumb, selfish penalty like that at the end of the game and still see the team almost kill it off, they almost survived. Like, you know, I'm sure he doesn't need to be told that, he knows. But it's good to have a coach that's going to still hold them accountable, because you need that from your – you need accountability from your fourth liners to your first liners. And so many times you see coaches that, you know, they treat their bottom guys so different than the top guys. And I don't think Trotz is like that. I don't think Trotz cares how much money you make. I don't think Lou cares how much money you make. I mean, look at Ladd. He's down in Bridgeport. You perform and you act the way that you're supposed to act and the way that the team wants you to act, and we'll be fine. And if you don't, then there's going to be repercussions. So I thought that was handled perfectly. And we got the win anyway, but we did give up a point to a conference rival. But all in all, I mean, we got the win. So to me, no harm, no foul. It's a good learning experience.
Yeah. Let it happen in December, not April, May.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so that game was also extended the Islanders' home point streak to 12-0-1. So they had 13 games with points at home, which was great. And that all came crashing down against the Predators. I don't have much to say about this game. I'll let you guys run with it. Here's my take. The Isles played a good game in the first period. They were heavy. They were you know, battling. They jump up 3-1. The building's rocking. They had all the momentum, and they couldn't get a save from their goalie. At the end of the day, Greiss started. Varley finished. Neither of them played all that well. I thought this game, you hang this one on Greiss for the most part. I thought he took the wind out of the Isles' sails. And that's a tough team to play against. And when you're banging bodies like that, and the other, they get two goals on four shots in a period, it's like, you're not going to, you know, that kills you. I mean, I've been on teams with bad goalies, and it's like, you bust your ass. You know, you're out there working hard, and the other team, you know, anything that's going to the net's going in, you just stop skating. And so, yeah, the team didn't look great towards the end, but I think this one, you needed saves from Greiss, and you didn't get it. And that's okay. Greiss has been great all year. He's been starting to trend a little downward. He's got to pick his game up a bit, but final score was 8-3. It was bad. It was ugly. Burn the tape and move on to the next one.
I think Butch said it, if you're going to lose bad, and also lose bad having not played that poorly. Like you said, I don't disagree. I think that the Islanders played a pretty good game until 6-3. I think that even the second period, I thought that they were decent, and the goals that were scored were not, I mean, the Islanders weren't great defensively. I mean, and I'm not even going to count the third period, because I think it's kind of tough to criticize a team that's down three goals with a goalie who can't stop anything. But I think that in the first two periods, they weren't bad defensively. Their goaltender was bad. And they sacrificed a little bit defensively to play an aggressive forechecking. I was thinking in soccer terms, I was going to say pressing. Game that established really good offensive chances. The Islanders could have scored, as much as the Predators scored 5 goals in the first 2 periods, the Islanders could have scored 6 in the first 2 periods. And I thought that, I mean, as much as Rene probably should have done better with some of the shots that went in, he also made some really good saves on shots that could have gone in. And guys like Beauvillier and Nelson, who are getting really, really good chemistry together. And also, I thought Jordan Eberle played really well, and the defenseman, and got some really good shots on net, Pulak and Pelech in particular. And I didn't even want to look at the plus minuses for the game, just because I didn't want to see who's on the ice the most for these goals. But
Taves had a rough night, I know that. But these weren't their fault. Like you gotta get saves. You have to. And they just weren't getting them. They weren't getting them.
Yeah, I don't remember there being a game like this all year. So, where it's been like, oof, the goaltending is so bad. Both of them, it's just, like you said, Damon, we've all played at much lower level than the NHL. But, for instance, I was on a team this season in a league. You get drafted, you get picked to a team. Our team on paper, forward defense, probably one of the best. But we had the last pick in the draft was our goalie. So, yeah, it was basically like how last night went, where you battle back to tie game 3-3, and then a shot from the sideboard, the half boards goes in the net. It's like, okay, never mind. Like you said, everyone just kind of your whole momentum, your whole game plan. It's like, well, you're down. You can't play looser and hope your goalie makes a big save so you can go back the other way on a 3-on-2 and make something happen. It's just, you start just concentrating on only playing defense, and that's not how you win games. You can't play like that. So chalk it up to a bad night, and let's see what happens next game.
I mean, so following the this week of games and everything, I mean, Isles are still in the driver's seat. They're 22-8-2. They're they're still looking real good. I mean, they went 3 in a row before this one, so they're gonna win 3 out of 4 games. I am just fine with that. So I don't mind this one. Again, I don't think this loss didn't bother me that much, because it's not that the team came out and laid an egg. The team was battling. They just they didn't get any help between the pipes, and that's going to happen from time to time. Just like sometimes the goalies are going to steal games when the team's not playing well. So this one was just a rough one. Real tough game on Thursday against the Bruins. It's on national TV now. It's in Boston. Boston hasn't been as good as they've been to start the season. They kind of sputtered a little bit, but Boston's a tough matchup against us. I like that Nashville just blew our doors off, because if the Isles come out and the same thing happens to them against Boston, they know that they've got to hit another gear. And on the flip side, if this game woke them up, I think we're in for a treat on Thursday. So that's going to be a tough one. That's going to be a real fun game. It's a shame that we won't be able to hear Brendan Burke. Is he doing the game?
He's doing the game.
Oh, man. National TV. That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, as soon as it left my, left my mouth, I was like, he might be doing it. So, no, good, good. That's awesome. So, I think we're good to wrap the game discussion up, unless you guys have anything else to add. But, I mean, look, the Isles, if they win their games in hand, they've got 3 on Washington. They'd be tied in points for the top team in the league right now. So, you can't really be upset. They're flying high.
Well, Damon, you guys are going to hear Brendan Burke, but I'm going to be at TD Garden with my Bruins fan friend, and wearing my Boychuk jersey.
Nice.
And that's sick. The thing is that it works both ways, because as much as I think of it as sticking it to Boston fans, as in we got Boychuk, also Boston love Johnny Boychuk. Or Boston loves Johnny Boychuk. And so it's also kind of like a defensive, don't kill me stance, because people in Boston are fucking crazy.
It's smart. No, it's smart. It's a very smart move. And will you be recording the Bean Pot Bake Off podcast in the parking lot, or is that going to be after the game?
That's going to be on the train. Nice. And nice. So if you're listening to that podcast special guest from my friend who I sent a risky text to last night saying, all right, the Islanders just got their doors blown off. I would not want to be the Bruins on Thursday night. And yeah. I really hope I don't regret that.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. You gotta have some fun. That's what sports is all about. So.
Do you think that it was good that Varley, who is probably almost definitely going to play on Thursday, also did not play well? I mean, his save percentage was .333.
I don't put much stock into when you come in the third like that. I mean, the game was kind of already out of hand. I mean, they were already down three, so the team's pressing that. You know, I wouldn't put besides Grice having an off night and him kind of being okay the last few starts, like, other than that, I don't really take much out of that game. Like, you're not going to win every game. We've been very spoiled this season to only see 8 regulation losses. Like, out of what, 32 games?
Like, and none of them have looked like that.
Right. So it's just going to happen. I'm not worried about Varley. He's been solid. Grice has been solid too. Grice just has to, ever since like that dizzy spell thing or whatever that happened when he took himself out, like, he's just been kind of like, he's been kind of off a little bit. So maybe, you know, maybe he just needs to kind of get recentered. Maybe you give Varley a few games. If Varley beats Boston, I think you go right back to Varley.
Yeah. Next
game. Like, I don't think because what, it's Thursday and then Saturday against Anaheim. So you got time there to rest. That might give Grice a reset that he needs. I think that's what you do. So we'll see. Thursday's a big game. But
Damon, you see, or Kenny as well, did you guys see the crazy stat where before last night's game, both goaltenders had faced 400 shots and one let in 377 shots in? One saved 377 and one saved 378.
I didn't see that.
Isn't that ridiculous?
It's crazy because that was what was happening last year too. Like, Grice and Leonard's numbers were like identical for like 98% of the season. It's just like the system is just greater than anything else. Like, it's wild.
Have 11 wins. They both have either a .237 or a .239 goals against at a .923 and a .924 save percentage. They're literally the same.
Yeah,
it's crazy, but Varlamov has been better. You know, his last four games. Let's forget about Nashville. He's 3-0, .939 save percentage, .969, .943. So, yeah, I think right now he obviously gets to start against Boston. And I you know what? It's Christmas time. Is it time to start giving these guys 2-3 games in a row? If they win, would it take away from the consistency that we've been having, being inconsistent picking our goalies? Like, we're consistently going back and forth. Is that going to throw things off for Grice? I mean, I don't think so. He's pretty much a professional backup, so he should be okay to sit for 3 games and then pop in. I mean, he's been doing that his whole career for us. So,
yeah.
You know, and what?
We've seen this with Grice. We've seen Grice, when he gets a higher workload, his numbers suffer. And I'm not saying that he's got a high workload now. I mean, it's been every other game since the very beginning of the season. So, you know, as far as starts go. But I don't think he's the type of goalie that you have to worry if you sit him for a few that he's going to suffer. I think you're absolutely right, Kenny. I think you can do that and you know, reset him. So we'll see what happens Thursday. I think that's the big thing. Before we get into the Garth Snow stuff, a couple of things that are, you know, kind of downers a little bit or depending on how you want to look at it. But I want to shout out to Oscar Lindblom. The Flyers are shutting him down this season. He ended up being diagnosed with a really rare form of cancer, Ewing sarcoma, which is like a bone or like bone tissue cancer, and like scary stuff. I mean, he's been having a great year. Obviously, as you know, I'm living with a Flyers fan, so I get to watch a lot of their prospects come up, and Lindblom was really putting it together this year. So best wishes to him. I hope that he heals up quick. He comes back, you know, better than ever. So that's a sad thing to see. And I also want to call out the horrific injury about 5 or 6 days ago when Niagara was playing the London Knights. The goaltender for the Ice Dogs, Tucker Tienen, got cut in his leg.
scary scene. They ended up canceling the game. People were fainting in the stands with the amount of blood that was on the ice. He's lucky to be alive. He's lucky. The London Knights are like the New York Yankees of junior hockey. So they have like the best medical staff. They really took care of him. And you know, and he's, you know, he's been stable in the hospital now, but, couple of really like bizarre stories this year. And, you know, best wishes to Tucker, best wishes to Oscar. Hope those guys, heal and come back better than ever. So I just wanted to touch on those two things before we get into Garth Snow.
Yeah, I heard he's going to make a full recovery. So I
which mean, one? The goalie? The
latter half, yeah.
Yeah, Tucker. Goalie. Yeah, yeah, I think so. I heard that too. So good for him. But okay. Well, if you guys don't have anything else to add, I think it's time to rip the Band-Aid off and get into Garth Snow. And
let's do it.
What we want to do, the way we thought that we could really look at this, because obviously, you know, we're going to talk about the results and things, but we thought that the smart thing to do in looking back on his tenure was to break it down into several different sections. His draft picks, his trades, his coach selections, and then, of course, overall results and our overall thoughts on him as a GM. You know, real interesting history if you're either new to the team or you need a refresher because it was so damn long ago. But in the middle of the summer, it was like July 18th, 2006, Garth Snow officially retired from being a goaltender for the New York Islanders and instantly became the general manager. And that was hot on the heels of one of the most bizarre off seasons you'll ever see a team have, where Neil Smith comes in, very, you know, well known, well established GM. He comes in, brings in Ted Nolan, well known coach, successful coach with the Sabres previously. Neil Smith drafts in 2006, drafts Okposo, all of our draft picks, and 41 days in, resigns. So the middle of the summer. So he drafts everybody. Guy lasts not even a month and a half. Quits. And Garth Snow hangs up the pads and says, yeah, I'll take a shot at this. Bizarre, bizarre, typical Islanders for that era under Charles Wong. Just a bizarre set of circumstances. The funny thing about that, and you guys might not know this. I didn't know this. In 2006-2007, Garth Snow was named the NHL Executive of the Year by Sports Illustrated. Did you know that?
What year?
2006-2007, his very first season as GM of the Islanders, he was named Executive of the Year
by Sports Illustrated. Is that given based on, like, age? Like, from lowest to highest? From youngest to oldest?
No. Believe it or not, the Islanders... Because that year, and we'll get into the trades and stuff, but like that year, the Islanders actually, they made the playoffs. He traded for Oilers fan favorite Ryan Smith, crying Ryan, who cried during the press conference that he had to leave Edmonton. I don't know what it is with these guys not wanting to leave Canada to play for us. Couldn't be the fact that we had a GM for 41 days and all that. Like, no, that can't be it. But he was aggressive, Snow. But yeah, 2006-2007, he was named Executive of the Year. And as you know, he was Islanders general manager from that season all the way through till last year, but the year prior. So 2017-2018 was his last season. So 12 years with the Isles, 4 playoff appearances, 1 playoff round victory. That was as far as we got. We got as far as the second round. Now, before we get into the trades and the draft picks that he made, I want to preface all of this by saying we don't know exactly what ownership, i.e. Charles Wong, prevented Garth from doing. He was under a shoestring budget. We all know that during his tenure, the Isles were trying to get the Lighthouse Project going. That's the whole reason why Wong bought the team, was, you know, to try to, you know, get the real estate deal going. And that was tumultuous. And so you don't know what he had lined up that Wong said no, what his limitations were. So I think that's really important when we look at all this. That's got to be the asterisk that we just don't know exactly what. You know, right now we know Lou Lamoriello has complete authority to do what he wants. We've got owners that are that have deep pockets. He's not limited to anything. Different case with Garth. So I just want to put that out there. Before we get into the weeds, boys, I want your overall impressions, thoughts on Garth.
You want to go first, Ben?
Yeah, I think it's difficult because I got the end of Garth. And so becoming an Islanders fan in the last couple of years, you just heard all the negative things. And you go back and you look at some of the things that we're going to look at, and it changes your impression a little bit because, like you said, we don't know what that asterisk is. And I know that – why is that word so hard to say? Anyway, I know ultimately I'm glad that he left. I'm glad that we got Lou in. I think that as much as the trades under Lou haven't been the best – haven't, like, happened except for Matt Martin, that I think he's done a good job, especially with bringing in Barry Trotz. But – so I'm happy that we're here now in a world post-Garth. He did a lot of good things and then negated them, like how he would draft decent players and then give up on them, mostly European talents, or how he would draft, I forget what year it was, where he drafted all defensemen. And it's hard to explain, and I think that's why we're doing the podcast, that he's this podcast about him, that he's so conflicting to talk about, is that you never know like what he was trying to do, because it's also confusing. He takes a step forward and he takes two steps back. And we always think of it as one step back, and it's interesting to go look at the individual step forward and then the individual two steps back, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard. I mean, like you said, Damon, with the whole Charles Wang thing, you got to really kind of assume that, you know, he wasn't allowed to do things. He inherited a team that I think is pretty safe to say was probably the least stocked with prospects out of every team in the NHL times two when he took over. I mean, we had nobody in our pipeline as far as AHL or blue chip prospects. So, and being a team with no ownership, no building, no future, there's only one way to win, and that's to draft. You're not going to be able to make these crazy UFA signings, which, you know, we still somewhat struggle with, even with a team that's in, you know, top half of the league, top third of the league. It's just is what it is geographically with the Rangers here and our situation still with the arena. You know, like, it's 2019. We're hopefully coming to an end in another year or two. But, I don't know where you want to go from here, Damon, but
I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, he came into it. So the 04-05 season was the lockout year. 05-06, the Isles were mediocre. They were like 36-40 or something. Like, they were average. They like finished fourth back then it was the Atlantic division. They finished fourth in the Atlantic. But what's more telling is that, realistically, Garth's first, and I think we go into the, I'd like to go into the draft part first, because the draft is the most pure. It's the least affected by ownership. It's what you do.
It's him.
It's all him, and it's his scouting staff. So
his first
season, full season as GM, where he could really make any kind of selections, he didn't have a draft pick until the third round.
Yeah.
Now, part of that is self-inflicted, because we'll get into the trade part, but he traded for Ryan Smith. But he had a third-round pick first. His first full year of drafting in 07, one guy, Mark Kadek, played in the NHL, and he only played 11 games. No one else played in the NHL. So his first year drafting was complete whiff, right?
It's not his fault. I mean, you really can't put it on
drafting him. Drafting is – it's –
Let's do it like this. Let's do it like this. I mean, so you think let's just grade, not grade, but let's just say good or bad. So 2007, would you say that I can't say it was a bad draft when you have 3 third-round picks, a fourth, a sixth, and a seventh. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, but you got to hit on one of those. You can hit on one of those. I think when you look at what he did down the road, you're going to say that this year was bad. So I'm going to say,
yeah,
that.
No, I get it. I understand. That's his first draft. You don't have a first or a second round pick. You don't have anything. He's getting to learn the whole how this works. And then obviously moving on to 2008, I would say that was like 2008, 2009 were home runs if you're saying that 2007 was a complete miss.
Well, how's – yeah, 2009 we're going to get to was one of the – I think one of the best drafts you could ever hope for as a hockey team. It was incredible. But let's go with 2008 first. Josh Bailey was Garth Snow's first-round pick ever. If that's not fitting for the divisiveness of Josh Bailey and how Bailey was mismanaged from the very beginning to what he is now – I mean, that's pretty symbolic for Garth's tenure, I think. But that year, I think he hit big with Bailey. He moved down. We had a higher draft pick. He actually moved down
twice.
Took another draft pick at 40 with Aaron Ness, who ended up being a pretty good defenseman. I mean, he only played 47 games in the NHL, but like not a bad shot. But where he really hit was in the second round that year, 53rd overall, he gets Travis Hamonic, who would end up being a major piece of our blue line during what we'll call the JT era. I thought that was a great move. He kind of missed on everybody else. He had a couple of guys like Yeri Niemi, Kirill Petrov, that I thought like, you know, could have been something but ended up being nothing. Matt Donovan was a promising U.S. defenseman that just – I don't know if it was part of our development that did him in or whatever, but he only ended up playing 69 NHL games. And everybody else, like he took that year, he took Kevin Poulin in the fifth round. But after Kevin Poulin, 148th overall, he gets Matt Martin. And even more impressive, that year in the sixth round, this dude drafts Jared Spurgeon.
He's got an eye for talent, dude. He does, man. Whoever is running the whole thing, whether he's the one actually making the decisions or the guys he had around him, I'm telling you, man, you're going to see. This guy knows what he's doing, especially after the first round.
Here's where I'm going to say I agree to a point, because back then, and I believe if you could do a quick search for us while we're going through this for Ryan Jankowski. Ryan Jankowski was one of the Islanders' main scouts back then, and he was Garth's right-hand man, and he was – I think when he left the Isles, our drafting really suffered. And again, that comes back to – Wong maybe not wanting to pay Jankowski, and you know, the scouting staff that we had, I'm sure was, you know, bare bones. But when Jankowski was with the Islanders, I believe that was when we really were hitting home runs like this. But Jared Spurgeon, and then here you go, Jared Spurgeon never played a game for the Islanders, and that's part of the problem with Garth. He had the vision to pick these guys. I mean, Jared Spurgeon sixth, Matt Martin fifth, incredible grabs in the fifth and sixth rounds like that. But you know, Spurgeon never played for the Isles, so you know,
well, we picked because we kind of like went with Aaron Ness, who's a similar type guy, and we thought he was going to be something, and he just never was. But you know what I mean, like, okay, so I can't put development on Garth, because we're running that team on a shoestring budget with like four guys. Like if you look at the Islanders management page, we have like assistants to assistants to assist. It's like we have 1, 2, 8, 12, 11. We have 13 people in our front office. I bet you if you went to 2007 and clicked on that, there'd be like five guys. It'd be like a president, a this. There's no assistants. There was no assistant to the goaltending coach. Like we probably didn't even have a goaltending coach. It was a complete joke. The guy running our organization didn't know a thing about hockey. Gave Yashin a 20-year deal because he just wanted to score goals. The guy didn't even back check. Like, he has no grasp on like how to develop these players. So I really can't put development completely on Garth when, I mean, that's more of the coaching staff, I feel like. You know what I mean? Like the day-to-day. So can you really like fault Garth for not making these guys work? It's, I mean, like, if Trotz would have taken over this.
But Gart's the one who brings the coaches in. I mean, yes, he couldn't have a major staff, but he could have picked quality guys, and he didn't. He very much surrounded them
It's really hard to like completely judge because like it's a huge asterisk here. You know what I mean? Like if it was now we're drafting guys and not developing them, then that's a bad draft. I don't think our drafting was bad because these guys didn't work out because we didn't have the other pieces in place to like have these guys flourish. And you know, you could see that when you have guys like, you know, Capuano and Gordon, and these guys are just yes men. It didn't matter who was the coach at the time because you're not going to win. It's like the Rangers having their coach now. Trotz is not going to make the Rangers win. It doesn't matter. They're just in a rebuild. They're going to lose and suck for 4 or 5 years. That's kind of how I felt our coaches were selected. It's just like a placeholder.
Yeah.
But I'm making. Well, I'm not, I don't want to make excuses.
I found Jankowski was hired August 2006.
Damon, you stole my thunder. I looked it up.
Oh, sorry. Go. You say the same thing, Ben. Go.
Well, I don't know if you're going to say this, but they fired him or they let him go, according to Newsday, about a month after the 2010 draft. Now, the 2010 draft, they had 2 first-round picks, and they were Nino Niederreiter and Brock Nelson. Now, the 2011 draft.
You skipped the best year, though, man. We got to stay in order here because you skipped 2009. In 2009, incredible.
Let's do Scott Jankowski or Ryan Jankowski. After 2009.
So he was 2006 to 2010, and arguably I would say were the best Islanders draft years under Gartz. So how much of that is Snow, and how much of that is Jankowski? So 2009, listen to this. Every single guy that they drafted in 2009 played in the NHL. Every single player. So first overall pick, John Tavares. Okay, not difficult there. 12th overall, Calvin DeHaan. 31st overall, Mikko Koskinen. 62nd overall, Anders Nilsson. 92nd overall, Casey Cizikas. 122nd overall, Anton Clementiev. He only played one game, so he was the miss there. 6th round, 152nd, last pick of that draft, Anders Lee. He drafted JT, DeHaan, Koskinen, Nilsson, Cizikas, and Lee that year. That is the Islanders today. Now, Koskinen and Nilsson, obviously, they're goaltenders. They're playing for other teams. Not a big part of it. But, like, even you look at JT, DeHaan, Cizikas, Lee, that's huge. That's huge for one draft year.
Yeah, and you can see where it goes down from there because that's one of the – like you said to prefix it, it's one of the best drafts that the Islanders have ever had, maybe the best they've ever had, and one of the best drafts – the best a GM could ask for.
Right. And that's with, you know, Jankowski setting up for 3 years. He's established there. That's one of those things where as much as I love Wong for keeping the team here, to let a guy like Jankowski go when he coming off of a draft. Now, you don't know at the time, but like that was – if you draft like that every year, you win in the cup. Like no doubt about it. So just an incredible, incredible year. And then, Ben, you alluded to 2010. Nino was 5th overall, which, again, great pick. 534 games played in the NHL up to this point. Brock Nelson right behind him, 30th overall, 480 games played. I mean, we know the deal with Brock. That they kind of had some misses after that. Nobody else played in the NHL. It was just those two. But you hit on both your first-round picks in 2010. That's a good, you know, that's a good draft class to walk away from. So like your first, you know, 2009, 2010, you got like 7 players that are going to be full-time NHLers on your team. 2011, he misses, well, depending on what you say, I mean, Ryan Strome, another 5th overall pick, didn't really work out with the Isles, but he's played 421 NHL games. Second round, he picks Scott Mayfield. Other than that, they were kind of misses that year. Mayfield was really the only one. We had a lot of picks and a lot of misses. We had in 2011, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 picks in that year. And really only Strome and Mayfield turned out to be anything. 2012, the big miss, 4th overall, Griffin Reinhart. Ville Poka, another one that he missed on. Third round, 63rd overall, Adam Pellick, great pick. And then the rest of them just kind of, you know, guys that went nowhere. This was the year, 2012 was the year of the defenseman. Every single guy that Garth Snow drafted was a defenseman. I don't know if anybody's ever done that before.
And Damon, this is after 2010, they fired Jankowski. 2011 and 2012 are kind of, I think, blueprints for what the rest of the Islanders' drafts under Snow looked like, where, you know, there's like a steal in like the third or the fourth round where, you know, we got Mayfield in 2011, Pelican 2012, you know, obviously still playing for the Islanders and having really great years. After the beginning of their careers, they did not look promising. They just like became really good defensemen like overnight. It was ridiculous. And the rest are just big, big misses. And plus one of the years is only defensemen where you're just like, what? Why
are we needed it. We needed it, though, because I remember when he did that, I was happy because we had no defensemen.
Only defensemen is not overkill. Like, even if you have, like, zero in your prospect pool, like, that's overkill.
It wasn't a great draft, though.
You can't tell me that those eight defensemen were the right eight players to draft and happened to also be defensemen.
No, I mean, the best one out of all of them, you had 1-7, Adam Pellick. I mean, nobody else is even in the league.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to jump to this part, but if you're going to talk about the 2012 draft, you know, you can rip them for picking Griffin Reinhart, but Griffin Reinhart was going to someone in the top five or six, so this was not like Garth just, like, reached for it and was like, oh, this is who I want. That guy was just a bust, and, you know, obviously what he turned Griffin Reinhart into are two of our best players on our team right now. So, you know, you make a mistake and you make up for it tenfold. I mean, the guy traded Griffin Reinhart for, you know, two picks. I think it was 16th overall and then like a late, early second that we also packaged together to get Beauvillier at 28. So we got Barzal and Beauvillier for Griffin Reinhart. So the guy turned a bust, unanimous bust prospect into two of our best players. So that's got to be mentioned also.
Oh, sure. And I think, you know, just to get off the drafting real quick, I think 2014 wasn't a terrible year either for Snow. 2013 was. I mean, he drafted Pulock 15th overall. No one else is. I mean, Alan Quine here and there is in the mix, but that's about it. Yeah. 2014, he drafts Dal Colle first overall and Hosang 28th overall. I don't know who that guy is. I haven't heard of him. Third round, Ilya Sorokin, fourth round, Linus Soderstrom, fourth round, also 108th overall, Devon Taves. Not a bad draft class. And then 2015, he gets Barzi and Bovey. Like you just said, that's the core of our team now. I mean, those are major players and not early in the, you know, Garth hits later in the rounds than he ever does early. When he gets like a top five pick, more times than not, he either misses on the pick or he mismanages the asset after he drafts it. Because I don't think Nino's a bad player, but like one for one, Cal Clutterbuck, don't get me started on that. We'll get into that in the trades. But anyway, other than that, right now, after that, you're starting to get into too early to tell even still. He drafts in 2016, he drafts Bellows 19th overall. Koivula, he drafted 120th overall. Other than that, Aho 139th overall in 2017. And then, that was it. That was his very last draft pick ever was Logan Cockerell, 201st in the seventh round. So after that, Lou took over and, you know, the names from there, but, all in all, I mean, I think he built a solid team. I just don't think he knew how to do anything with like what he didn't know what he had with a lot of those, and that goes back to me thinking that it was Jankowski who saw the value in those players, not necessarily Snow, which again, it's not really Snow's job to do that. That's why you have head scouts, that's why you have assistant GMs for that sort of thing. But I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here.
The 2017 draft was probably the worst draft I've ever seen, and we had what was it, a second, a third, a fifth, a sixth. So I mean,
we only had five picks though.
Yeah, it's a bad draft.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you were talking about how Garth set up a decent team and he didn't know what to do with it. And so that makes you think, like, he couldn't have been that clueless, but he was, like, clueless in in weird places, which makes you think, how did he get to where he is? If he's that clueless, how did he do so many, like, pretty good, so many good things?
And loyalty. Wong's loyalty to him, to a fault.
No, but I'm saying, if he did so, like, it works both ways. If he did so many good things, then why was he also so clueless? And if he was so clueless, how did he do so many good things?
You can, like, only control so many things.
A broken clock is right twice a day, but a broken clock isn't right 30% of the day.
Right. No, I
he doesn't have control of the entire clock, though. You know what I mean? Like, he can only control so many. Like, the only thing that's in his control 100% is probably the draft.
Right, which is why I wanted to start with that. Because trades, again, it requires, number one, another partner. Number two, ownership approval, salary implications. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think the team we have right now, the roster we have, for the most part, is thanks to Garth Snow and the roster that he built and gave to Lou. So that can't be overlooked. But that's also a team that could have been better than they were, should have been better than they were, and weren't, because of mismanaged, you know, assets and things. So that's where my problem lies. And I think my biggest issue with Garth is going to be when we talk about the trades, which, if you guys are good with, I want to kind of jump into so we don't run too long.
Yeah, go for it.
But, like, okay, so the biggest thing he did, February of 07, he trades for Ryan Smith. He takes a bubble team. The Islanders were, you know, pushing for a playoff spot, gets arguably one of the better forwards available in the league for basically nothing. Robert Nilsson, who ended up was a draft pick bust. Ryan O'Mara, who is a prospect bust. And our 2007 first round pick, which was 15th overall, which the Oilers drafted Alex Plante. So that was nothing. So we got Ryan Smith. He was a rental. He never signed with us again, but we got him for basically nothing. That was the first one. I loved that move at the time. I thought that was aggressive. I thought it was really trying to, you know, get the Isles to a good spot. After that, you know, he starts acquiring draft picks to try to build the system back up again. Again, we were depleted at the time. I mean, most of these picks. Or most of these trades, rather, are all for basically nothing. He unloads Marc-Andre Bergeron for a third-round pick. We don't really do much with that. He trades down in 2008. Our first-round pick, which was seventh overall, down to ninth for Bailey, and he gets a second-round pick in Aaron Ness. Like, he's doing a lot. We traded our first-round pick in 08, which was our fifth overall, to move down to seven. So, yeah, you were right. We had the fifth overall pick that year. We move down to seven, then we move down to nine. So he stockpiles all those picks, but he misses on all the second round and third rounders that he drafted. So other than that, the big ones after that, I mean, he trades Campoli and Mike Comrie in 2009. He trades Billy Guerin to the Penguins in 2009 when they go on their cup run. All draft pick moves. Nothing really major to consider. I mean, he's offloading Andy Sutton. I mean, again, like, just going down. Now we're in 2010, so he really didn't make any splash moves. After, I thought he got gun shy after the Ryan Smith trade. I thought, because Smith didn't resign, it was kind of a disaster. The next big move that he ever made through a trade was when the Isles got Wisniewski in 2010 from Anaheim. He was a real good aggressive defenseman. I thought that was a good move for us. We traded him the next year, though. After that, I mean, just going through, we got the rights to Christian Ehrhoff, but we couldn't sign him. So he tried to get Ehrhoff from the Canucks in 2011. Other than that, you know, I'm just going through the list here. I mean, he traded Stride. It was more unloading. So 2013, June 2013 was the first real. That was when Garth kind of got back into the groove. He trades Niederreiter. We know the deal there. Nino Niederreiter, in my mind, should have never been moved from the Islanders. He was a power forward that we needed. He was mismanaged. He was put on the fourth line as a rookie. He should have gone back to juniors. He should have developed longer. He was playing with scrubs on his wing, and it soured the relationship. Is that all on Garth? No, I thought Nino had a bad attitude with it too. Whatever the case is, squandered a great pick, and we basically got a third rounder and Cal Clutterbuck. So Clutterbuck has been a major part of the Isles' identity in the fourth line, so okay. But like from an asset standpoint, I didn't think that was a win for us. I thought it was we could have done better with a fifth overall pick. That same year, beginning of the season, he trades for Thomas Vanek. He trades Matt Molson, our 2014 first rounder, and our 2015 second rounder for a rental. But I remember I called into NHL Network at the time on Sirius, and I loved that trade at the time because I said Garth went out and got John Tavares a winger. And Vanek and Tavares were awesome together that season. Like, they were great. They put up a lot of points, but Vanek didn't re-sign. I mean, Kenny, how did you feel when we got Vanek? Because I was thrilled. Like, I thought it was great.
Yeah, I was pretty pumped. It's really hard to, like, it's so hard to go back and go through all this stuff because there's so many different factors. It's like not 100% on him as much as we want to give him credit for the draft probably, but it's so not his fault for, like, you know what I mean? Like, what are you supposed to do, make a big trade every year? Like, it's just, you can't. So when he made that trade with Smith and then didn't do anything for a couple of years and he comes out and gets us Vanek, it's like, yeah, I was pumped up. But then, you know, what happened after that, him not wanting to re-sign here, it's kind of like, oh, what a crappy trade. But it is what it is. You got to take a chance. You know what I mean? How many opportunities does he have to bring in a guy here with another team? I bet you there wasn't many opportunities for him to kind of like wade through and say, oh, okay, let's do this one. He probably just got excited. Oh, you'll do it? Oh, let's do this trade. You know, like, I don't – it's hard to judge, but I definitely was. It seems like that's the kind of guy we need to bring in right now, a scorer like that. But I thought it was a good trade. Just what are you going to do? Our team was not good.
And we didn't qualify for the playoffs that year. So, yeah, you know, we brought Vanek in, tried to give JT a dynamic player, and we didn't make the playoffs. So I will say this. I think as Garth's drafting quality went down, his trading quality went up. The following year, he goes out and he does what I think turned this team around. And to this day, the same day, he goes out and he gets Johnny Boychuk from the Bruins and Nick Leddy from the Blackhawks. And for Boychuk, he gave second round picks and a conditional third round pick. For Leddy, he gave Ville Poka, TJ Brennan, Kent Simpson, yeah, who exactly, and Anders Nilsson. He's the only one that was like of any quality. Changed the Islanders. Changed the blue line completely. We made the playoffs that year. That was the year that I believe we played the Capitals. That was that war where we lost in seven to the Caps in the first round. That was a good team. That was the start of the Isles starting to establish themselves. JT was coming into his prime. We get these two, you know, top-end defensemen that are playing together all year, and we rode that momentum. And really, it came down to home ice, and the Capitals had a good team, and they beat us in seven. But that was a fun year. That was the first year that you started to get excited again to be an Islander fan.
I think, you know, that draft 2012 took all those defensemen. You go for the top three or four here. Griffin Reinhart turned him into Beauvillier Barzal. Ville Poka turned him into Nick Leddy. Pellick's still here. Mm-hmm. Then you get Pulak, and did he draft Taves?
Yeah.
Devin Taves? Okay. Mm-hmm. Then he gets Devin Taves the next year, right? So now you look at the Islanders' defense right now, and this is all Garth Snow. Devin Taves, Ryan Pulak, Scott Mayfield, Adam Pellick, Boychuk, Leddy.
Yeah.
It's like, so Garth
and
Snow
and Hickey
sucks
too. If you want to put Hickey in that mix, yeah, too. I mean, I know he's in the AHL, but like he was a waiver claim.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That was not the only time he did something like that. Didn't he pick up someone a year before on waivers as well, or a year?
Well, he'd always try. He tried with like Robbie Shrimp and Shane Prince, and like he would always try that stuff.
I thought there was another guy that didn't suck completely.
We would hit the bargain bin, and then really he takes that momentum 2015 starts the fleecing of the Oilers with Peter Chiarelli. So this is where Garth undid a whoops with Griffin Reinhardt. While Reinhardt's stock was still high, he trades him to Peter Chiarelli and the Oilers for a 2015 first round and 2015 second round pick. And we all know where that led us to. So unbelievable trade there. That trade, I think it's the Boychuk trade, the Leddy trade, and that Reinhardt dumping that were his three best moves as GM of the Islanders from a trade standpoint. Just
so he drafts good early, kind of messes up with trades, and then 3 years later, it all comes to like a culmination of here you go, here's your top six defenseman for the next 5 to 10 years, and two forwards you can have for 10 years, and I just feel like he. Oh, that was such a great trade. It's who cares?
And then he followed it up, Kent. He follows it up with Eberle for Strom. Undoing another, like Strom, same thing like Dal Cole. Like he's not as good as what you wanted him to be for a top five pick like that. But good on Garth for recognizing that. Gets Eberle. We all know how that went. And 2 days later, unloads Travis Hamonic, does him a favor. He wanted to go back to Western Canada to be close to his home.
Classy move.
You know, Garth, classy move. Travis said that Garth will always be a friend to him. He respects him for doing that. And we got a 2018 first rounder, a 2018 second rounder, and a conditional second round pick for Hamonic. And that first round pick ended up becoming Noah Dobson. So basically traded Hamonic for Dobson, even though Garth didn't pick him. So another great move.
I'll take that 8 days a week.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then he did like a kind of a bonehead move with like the Davidson, getting Davidson for gave up our third round pick, but like he was kind of struggling at the end. And then his last move as GM of the Islanders was acquiring Chris Wagner for Jason Chimera, which was kind of a one for one, whatever. But you know, trades he had mostly I thought good moves when you look at the body of work from a trading standpoint. I thought he did okay when you really look at it. I mean, look, you make one trade different and it affects the whole league. You know, a butterfly flaps his wings on the ice in Anaheim and somebody breaks their ankle in Boston. You know, like that stuff happens. But you look at this, you look at his trades, it's very average. You know, I mean, I thought he was pretty smart. He gave up the first round pick, but he basically dumped Grabowski to the Golden Knights. And he did one thing, and I'll say this, everybody was going nuts. They're like, why on earth is Garth Snow protecting Adam Pellick in the expansion draft? I think he was right.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I agreed with it because you could just – the guy who's 6'3", skates like he's 5'10". He's great. Like he just wasn't ready yet at that time, but you could tell like – other teams would have been like, let's get this guy and mold him into what he is right now. So it was a good move. We got to 2013 with Pulak, correct? And then I just want to mention 2014. I don't know. Are we going to get there? I mean, we got Taves, but you can't forget Sorokin.
Well, we did. Yeah, no, we went through that. Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, 2014 was a good draft class also, I thought.
Sorokin deal could put him over the top as unreal. Don't forget,
Sorokin said, I will not come and play in the NHL for the Islanders with Garth Snow.
Okay.
He said that.
That's fine. That's personal. It doesn't mean that he didn't get drafted by Garth Snow and he's still part of the Islanders organization. And it's going to work out for us, I think. I think that's going to be one of our best picks.
Right. And lastly, the last part of this, which I think is maybe the most important of all, and I think we can attest to that this year specifically, or this and last year, the coaches that Garth Snow brought in. Now I know we weren't in a position to pay coaches like we do now, but he inherited Ted Nolan. Ted Nolan stayed for 2 years. The first guy that was a Garth guy, technically, was Scott Gordon. We know how that worked out. Gordon was coached from 2008 to 2010. He wasn't ready to be in the NHL, but he was killing it in the AHL. So I can't fault him for that one. He had this overspeed system, and he was learning and this and that and all that. So whatever. Didn't work out. He had a .417 winning percentage. Then he brings in everybody's favorite, Captain Jack, Jack Capuano, from 2010 to 2017. Cappy was the coach in Bridgeport. He comes over, he coaches the Islanders. And I think this was really where we squandered the JT years. I think this team needed an established coach. To go from one AHL coach to another, I thought Capuano overachieved in some years, but I think he was vastly outcoached for a majority of his tenure here, even though he had a 536 winning percentage. We all know how that ended. Then he brings in Doug Waite. Doug Waite has a great end of the season as interim coach when they fire Capuano off of a bad start in 17. But Doug Waite's full season with the Islanders was an absolute disaster. And
that, we were so close to making the playoffs that year where Waite came
one
in
for point. Capuano. 1 point. We missed it by 1 point.
That was that rally. That was my first because my first year as like a real Islanders fan, I think was the last full Capuano year. And that was my like first full year as the year where we went from Capuano to Waite was my first like full year. I was Islanders like from beginning to end, anticipating the season before, talking about winning another game, getting another point closer to that coveted line on the NHL app.
The thick line. We call it the peasant line. If you're below that line, you're just a peasant.
That I was just. I remember going into for whatever reason in middle school we had Spanish class first every single day, and I just remember going in like, yeah, your Bruins are first in your division. Who, you know, fuck you guys. The Islanders, they're getting ever closer to that peasant line. We were really really close that year. That was an amazing rally.
Yeah, no, that was. And then that was what made the next season so disappointing. And it just, you could see it all unraveling. And that was the first real full season that Ledecky and Malkin had control. And I thought they handled it well. And, you know, the rest is really history. But I think the biggest stumble that Garth had, and again, we don't know how much of that was tied to Charles Wong. The coaches that he brought in were just not NHL quality coaches. Scott Gordon, first NHL team he ever coached, New York Islanders. Jack Capuano, first NHL team he ever coached, New York Islanders. Doug Waite, first NHL team he ever coached, New York Islanders. You can't have three guys in a row that have never had NHL quality coaching experience.
Who do you think was at the interviews? You think Trask was at the interviews?
Well, that's part of it too, but it's the whole – I get it.
You know what I mean?
He
had a choice of guys and it was like, let's go with this guy. Like, I just don't see that happening. It's like really hard to like, all right, what? So you're telling me there's only one GM that did good, the guy who wins the cup every year. And if everyone else sucks, it's like, what, how are we grading this? Like, Islander fans, it's so easy to be like, he sucked. Like, what were you expecting to happen, dude? Like, you're going to say
10 year increments, Kenny. You look at it in 10 year increments, I think, when you have a GM like that, if you can, or 5 year increments.
Yeah.
Go for it. Continue. My bad.
No, I was just going to say, I think that Garth was handcuffed, as many GMs were. And even, and people don't want to hear this either, but so was Milbury back in the day. By a shoestring budget, a team that had no identity, that had no stability, and he would try to do the best he could. I think that he, you know, draft is a crapshoot, and I think he probably, if you look at other teams, he probably drafted better than the average, than the league average.
For sure.
I'm going to give him that. I think if you believe the rumors that he went to Malkin and said, I want to trade Tavares, and he said, absolutely not, it's off the table, well, then you can't hold JT leaving. What you can hold, and I don't even know, JT's another whole argument. I think he was going home no matter what. But, you know, Sorokin not coming over because of him, Spurgeon, Niederreiter, like there's a lot of guys that didn't work out under Garth Snow for whatever reason. And I want to play, I don't know if Kenny, I know you've heard this clip, but Ben, I don't know if you've heard it. I'm hoping that the audio is going to come through, but this is to me Garth Snow in a nutshell. And this was him being interviewed on TSN right after he drafted Josh Hosang.
Team format. outfit, Brandon, and they shit on me too. Well said. The girls know the general manager of the New York Islanders takes.
He literally said, "Well said." He said, "They shit on me too." Yeah. On TSN, Garth Snow, ladies and gentlemen.
I love it.
And then the other guy, the journalist, goes, "Well said." Love it.
Yeah, it goes, "Well said." Yeah. So I mean, like, he took chances. I don't think he really ever had the budget to blow the team out the way he probably wanted. And I think the Islanders are in a big way today. They are who they are because of Garth Snow. What I will say is how much of the culture is tied to your GM versus your ownership versus that whole unit. I mean, those are things that we don't really know. But I will say this, when you look at the results, when you've made the playoffs 4 times out of 12 years and you only win 1 round under a GM, I think no matter what, you have to look at it and say it was a failure.
Exactly. We're getting into this segment where we're sort of connecting what Kenny was talking about. Like, we had pretty good drafts and, you know, some pretty good trades. And so what did he do wrong? Well, we didn't succeed under him. And he, at the same time, we are very much a team, as both of you have said in different contexts, very much a team that is a product of the Garth Snow GM, as any team would be less than 2 years removed from him being fired. But he was as much as he made mistakes, he brought us to where we got Lamoriello in, obviously, and not just in like the literally he was there and then he left. We are his team from then, and he was the right person to bring us there. I almost want to say he was like a Moses, where he couldn't go into the land of Israel.
This just got super deep. I know we're running long when we're bringing up Moses.
No, but yeah, fair. But I don't. That's why I don't want to say it, because it's like it makes it deeper than it is. But the metaphor that I'm trying to get at is he led us through like dark days, and he didn't make all the right decisions, and he got up to a point where he couldn't do anymore, and it was time for someone else to just bring us into the promised land.
So and does that make the Garth Must Go billboard the burning bush or no?
I think it makes.
I don't know, Charles Wong. I just wanted to get the billboard mentioned in there. That was
yeah, no, fair. I don't.
That was a stretch. I know that.
But. It was very much a stretch. I was trying to take it seriously and it was not working. But we got to a point where we needed Joshua to come in, and I don't mean Joshua Hosang. I mean Lou Lamoriello.
Yeah, it's really hard to, like, you just look at the Islanders stats leaders top to bottom, and you got, I'm just gonna say if the guy's a Garth guy or not. We got Barzell Garth, Nelson Garth, Beauvillier Garth, Bailey Garth, Lee Garth, Brassard No, Pulak Garth, Taves Garth, Eberle Garth, Letty Garth, Scott Mayfield Garth, Casey Zizekas Garth, Clutterbuck Garth, Pellick Garth, Boychuk Garth, Del Col Garth, Komarov Garth, Martin Johnston Garth, and Grice.
Yeah, but okay, Kenny, I hear you. But that same group under Garth and Doug Waite didn't even make the playoffs.
But you can't put that on. You just can't say, oh well, this is all on Garth. The guy doesn't. He's not coaching the players. He's picking the players. If
no,
he had complete
he
autonomy,
it
okay. Hold on. So you're telling me right now that if we Islanders had Trotz and all the management they had from 2008 to 2018, that we would have still sucked. That these guys weren't the right picks. Or are you saying that they were the right picks, we just had the right development, and that's on – how is that on Garth? Garth might be the general manager, but he wasn't the one making the decisions. We all know that.
Yeah, but how many times do you see – oh, go ahead, Ben. Go.
I was just going to say that he's the one bringing everyone in to do it, and I'm not ready to sit here and say that I would have felt comfortable with him bringing in the guys to develop these players, because we all know we have a good roster. I mean, look where we are in the standings, and as much as it's due to coaching, we have good players to do it as well. We wouldn't be doing it with scrubs. Garth brought them in, so credit to him.
Yeah,
wasn't the right to continue them. And we know that. We know that he wasn't the right player to continue with them because of he was the GM for 10 years. Right. And he continuously had prospects that were at the same level, if not higher, than guys like Adam Pelech. I mean, we drafted Griffin Reinhart 2 rounds before Adam Pelech, and I mean, sure, he made the right call to trade him. He was not going to be the prospect. Adam Pelech, we didn't learn anything under 10 years under Garth that would have led me to believe that a team under the supervision of Garth Snow would have groomed Adam Pelech and Scott Mayfield to be the defensemen they are today. Now, as much as that is on Barry Trotz, Barry Trotz wouldn't have been here if Garth Snow hadn't left.
I'm with you. Look, I know that he put the players out. He constructed this roster, but we've seen this roster for the 90% of this roster under Garth and the guys that he brought in. And for whatever reason, at some point, if you're the GM, you're the one calling the shots, it falls to you. No matter what, that's the point of leadership, taking responsibility. So, yeah, it was great that he brought all these guys in. Do I think he's as bad as some people say? No, I don't think he was a bad GM. I thought he was a very average GM with poor ownership, which skews the perspective in a big way. Okay, I love Charles Wong. Rest in peace. He is the reason the Islanders are still here. He tried everything to keep this team on Long Island, and eventually he succeeded. Because he brought in the guys that inevitably, you know, eventually got us the new arena and everything. But from a hockey management standpoint, like, he didn't know anything. And so Garth was handcuffed by that. I think he didn't have the credibility in the league that a guy like Lamoriello has. Most people don't. But you have to look at it on a whole. He had 12 years to build something, and he couldn't. He couldn't manage the assets that we had. And ultimately, we lost a decade. This team lost a decade. It didn't gain new fans. It stayed a joke, and it never took a step forward because we didn't have a good product on the ice. And if you're the general manager of a team, that responsibility falls on you, period.
Yeah. So that – sorry, if you were going to continue, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's pretty much what I say. Again, my overall take is he's not as bad as people say. Again, I think he's average, and I think he worked for poor ownership, and he was hamstrung in a lot of ways, and he did the best he could to his ability, and it just didn't, you know, he just couldn't put it all together.
You made a good point there about the other things, about the growing more fans and that kind of thing. And we talked about it last week, and I talked about it on my solo show like a month ago or something like that, about how the Islanders have been making good PR moves and social media moves. And you can't tell me that Lou doesn't have anything to do with that. And that was that advancement, even if Lou just hired someone to do that or hired someone to hire someone to do that, those are calls that would never have been made under Snow. And we know because they weren't for 10 years. And it's not just speculating. We were in the same situation 10 years ago, just nothing happened. And, also, I think it's a decent place to wrap up, partly because we were sort of winding down, and also partly because Kenny's internet just went out.
Oh, boy. Yeah, well, sure, it went out. I think he pulled the plug because he was so annoyed with that. So, all right, well, while Kenny tries to get back up here, I want to read some comments I put out on our Facebook page and on Twitter. I gave everybody the opportunity to kind of speak their piece and rant or defend Garth Snow. So I want to read some of these comments here as we wrap up. So apologies if I pronounce your name incorrectly. I'm doing the best I can. Brian Grashik says, I'd say he built a pretty good team through the draft. A lot on this current team are his, which we touched on. Christopher Costigan said it helped ripping off Edmonton yearly. Totally agree. Andrew Lubash says he never realized the necessity of having a real head coach. Puck luck just didn't cut it. Peter Bogle responded to that and said he never realized much, but that gigantic goalie pads make a bad goalie mediocre. But he did make some good trades with the idiot in Edmonton. So that was pretty funny. Chris DeMeo could never develop talent, which was his undoing. Brian Fitzgibbons, his trade for Ryan Smith when we were hovering around eighth place in the conference really stung. Felt like such a Hail Mary. I don't even want to remember what he gave up for that disaster. Well, Brian, luckily for you, he didn't give up really anything. He gave up some really bad prospects that never played in the NHL, so or played very limited games. So that actually wasn't that bad of a trade, all told. So, you know, just some interesting stuff there, and we appreciate everybody's feedback on that and giving us their comments. You know, yeah, Garth is an interesting – he's an interesting guy.
Thank you guys so much for all the feedback we've gotten on the comments that you're talking about. And if you have any feedback, if you like our takes, if you don't like our takes, feel free to respond to us on the same message board that Damon is talking from, or at our Twitters, which Damon has it on like a note card. I'm assuming that.
No, it's all memory. It's all memory. You want me to take us out? I can do that right now.
Right before that, I wanted to just leave you with one more thing that I think I might have said before we went on air. Disappointingly, I would wish Kenny could react to it, but you know, shit happens. My impression is that Garth's last, or not last, but yeah, maybe last big decision as Islanders GM, which I don't think we got to, or maybe we touched on it a tiny bit, was giving himself an awful, awful look by giving Vegas whatever they wanted to take Grabowski, and more importantly, not take Pelech, which we did allude to, to take Grabowski and also Berube. So we got rid of the three goalie conundrum, which was, I think, also one of the reasons that we hated Islanders coaching and just the Islanders front office in general, I guess.
Right.
But he gave himself a bad look because of everything he gave up. And it just looked like he was giving up everything in sight for something not that important.
I disagree with you on this, Ben, because Vegas went to the Cup Finals that year. Every team got fleeced. So Garth protected his guys.
No,
unloaded salary on a player that was not going to play again, who was injured, and protected his guys, and he gave up a first rounder for it. So I don't. No,
I agree with you. I agree with you that it wasn't a bad, that it was a very good decision. I think at the time it wasn't considered as such. Am I wrong in saying that? I wasn't on Twitter.
I was happy with it when it happened, honestly. I didn't want to lose anybody. So I was cool with that. I was cool with that. I thought that we, you know, that first round pick that kind of hurt, but you know, first round pick is a crapshoot. NHL players on your roster are guaranteed NHL players. You know what they are already. So I'd rather protect those and let Vegas try to, you know. So I didn't have as big of a problem with that. I didn't think that was a blunder. I think everybody did the best they could given the circumstances of the expansion draft and having so many players exposed.
Anyway, what I was trying to like get to, and I was taking too long, I guess, is like, even if he didn't take a bullet for it, he like put himself on the line, giving up a lot to sort out a cap situation and get the most out of the expansion draft and get Vegas from taking the best out of the Islanders organization. And I think because of that, we're in so much better a place. I mean, can you imagine this Islanders team under Lou if we still had to worry about Berube and Grabowski and the all the cap hits that we got rid of?
But you think about it. I mean, Lou's not gonna like Lou. That wouldn't fly with Lou. He would just waive one of them. I mean, look what he's already cleaned up the stuff. He sent Ladd to Bridgeport. He sent Hosang home. Although also failed to mention, but Josh Hosang will be returning to Bridgeport. He called Lou and asked if he can come back and play. So we'll see if that goes anywhere. But you can see Lou handles things differently. He's like, oh, you're going to request a trade or you don't, you know, you're not going to do what we want. Go home. Oh, you're not playing to a $5.5 million contract to your $5.5 million contract ability. Go to Bridgeport. Like he handles things differently than Garth because he's got the clout. He can do that. He's a Hall of Fame GMer. So
yeah,
he can do that. So it's just different. I just think it's different. I think that's why we didn't go into like, oh, who did Garth pass up on in the draft? Like you can do that with every team. So that's why I don't like doing that because you don't know what these guys are.
Is that Garth, the end of what Garth did helped get a sort of a clean slate for the next guy a little bit. If you get what I mean, like with the exception of Ladd, there's not a lot of like proper shit on this team.
Right, right. I think Garth's, one of Garth's biggest sins was after that, I think it was the 2016-2017 season when we beat Florida in the first round and then lost to the Lightning. I know that we lost Nielsen and Okposo, and I know that they overpaid, the teams that got him, Buffalo and Detroit, overpaid for both of those guys. But my biggest issue is that we never built on the success of that team. Like, he never knew what to do to get the team to the next level. He never improved on that. It was just the same results. And realistically, we stole that series from Florida. We were lucky to win that series. So,
yeah.
You know, we dropped down in the wild card and just ended up, you know, playing a team that we probably shouldn't have played in the first round. So there was a lot of luck involved in that, too. So that that's another one that I wanted to mention.
We had more points than Florida. Remember that year? Because the Metro
Yeah, and the Rangers were mad because I think Vigneault was saying – because, like, we didn't play our guys, like, the last three games to, like, drop down, and, like, Vigneault was pissed.
Did we actually?
With the Rangers.
I forgot about that. That's
hilarious. Yeah. We played some games there, but it's gamesmanship. I mean, that's what you would try to do. So, I mean, you could talk about Garth all day long. I think – you know, I've kind of said my piece. I think you've said your piece. I think it's a good time to wrap up if you're good with that.
Yeah, I was going to say – just get our plug our Twitter handle.
Well, that's it. I'm gonna leave us with a fun little another little clip from Sunrise as we head out. But guys, thank you so much. We had just phenomenal numbers on our last episode. We appreciate all the listens. Thank you so much for sticking with us. We would love to know what you think about Garth after you've heard our takes on it. So make sure you follow us on our Facebook group, the Long Island Sound Podcast. This podcast is available on Anchor FM. It's available on SoundCloud. It's available on iTunes, Spotify. We've had a lot of requests for Stitcher. We're working on that. I'm sure we'll get on that soon. Hit us up on Twitter. Ben is at @LISound_. I'm at KaijuBlue13. Again, thanks so much for listening. And I will leave you with the serenade from Sunrise. So you guys have a great week.
Nice alliteration.
Yeah, well, thank you. I love alliterations. And we'll go beat the Boston Bruins. How about that for another one? All right, guys.
That was too forced.
Yeah, true. All right. For Ben, Damon, Kenny lost internet. They're digging up the road near his house. He's always got problems. Squirrels, road construction things. So anyway, thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys later.